I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
It's appealing to think of great artists as having great rivalries. A current show at the Museum of Modern Art in New York frames Matisse and Picasso as lifelong friends and ferocious competitors. We're invited to see these heroes of 20th century art goading each other, spying and stealing ideas, and also leading each other on to magnificent new heights in their work. We do love the idea that two creative geniuses might be jealous of each other's talent. Any truth to it brings them down to earth and makes them more like the rest of us, just as we love it when the gods in the Greek pantheon behave in mortal, ungodlike ways. My guest is the writer Paul Theroux. He has written 24 novels, as well as more than 12 travel books drawn from his journeys in Asia, the Mediterranean, and South America. And his latest book is called Dark Star Safari, Overland from Cairo to Cape Town. Paul Theroux, welcome to Studio 360.
It's great to be here, Kurt.
Tell me about Dark Star Safari and why this particular trip at this particular time compelled you.
I had been trying to psych myself up for this trip back to Africa. I went to Africa in 1963 as a Peace Corps volunteer at a time when countries were just being given their independence, or they had struggled to get their independence. So 63 was a long time ago. People were saying in 5 years, 5 to 10 years, this place is going to be on its feet. Everything's going to be great. We're training teachers. They're getting money. Oxfam, Save the Children, all of them were, you know, digging in and doing stuff. And it's just a way of seeing what happened, like that tree you planted a long time ago in front of your house, a little sapling. Did it grow? Did someone kick it over? You know, is it bearing fruit? So it was that kind of part of it, memory lane, and part of it were places that I had never been before. And to go, I thought, back to my school, leaving from Cairo, going through Africa, seeing the school, and then continuing to Cape Town, overland.
And the sapling doesn't look too fruitful or healthy.
No, it's pretty. It didn't grow. It didn't. Something happened. It wasn't watered. Someone stole the fruit. All sorts of things happened. I mean, I must say my trip was joyous. I loved the trip. I loved going to the Sudan and Ethiopia. But I discovered things hadn't really turned out that well in places that I knew, in places that I could verify 40 years ago, it would look like this, and now it looks like something else.
When you were first in Africa 40 years ago, and one of the reasons we thought of you for this show is your friendship with V.S. Naipaul, whom you met in Africa. A relationship about which you wrote a book, and a relationship that was characterized by some readers and reviewers as a rivalrous one. Do you feel as though it was or it is?
No. It wasn't rivalrous at all. It's kind of I mention him in this book too. In Dark Star Safari, I talk about him because I remember where I met him and how he behaved and what an interesting guy he seemed to me at the time. He was 34 years old, but he seemed much older. I was 22. A difference in ages meant that it couldn't possibly be a rivalry. It was a master-servant relationship or a teacher-student relationship. It was a mentor, whatever. He was teaching me things, showing me things. And it was very good for me. I mean, he taught me things that I'll always remember. He said famously, I have no masters. I have no rivals. I have no competitors. I have no boss. I owe nothing to anyone. I am just myself. And he said that that's what a writer must be. A writer must have no rivals.
Is it not possible, though, or does it seem entirely untrue that, yes, you were this young man looking up to this master when you were 22 and he was 34, but by the time you wrote this book and you were whatever you were, 40-something or 50 perhaps, do you not see that that's possible, that this once, you know, obedient, subordinate relationship blossomed into some kind of a rivalrous, envious feeling or not?
At a certain point, yes, I think it was a rivalry, not in my eyes, perhaps in his, because he felt underrewarded. His mantra was, I want $1 million. It was £1 million. I've got to have £1 million. If I have £1 million, I'll be all right. When my books began making movies, he said, you got $1 million for that, didn't you? I said, no, I didn't get anything like $1 million. And I could see that he really wanted – he's a very, very insecure person, and he felt that security came from money. Of course, we know that security doesn't come from money, although he got his million. I mean, when I was in South Africa, I saw a headline pessimistic globetrotter wins Nobel Prize, and I thought I had got it, and he got it.
Well, there you go. You're rivalrous pessimistic globetrotters.
That's right. That's right. Who's the most pessimistic? But I think actually he felt he was my rival, but I didn't think that I was his at all. And sometimes rivalries can be one-sided. He didn't like to hear any. I once said to him, you know, I was reading George Orwell's essays, and I said, I find you have the same qualities as Orwell. And he said, I don't think Orwell is much of a writer, do you? Really? And I said, well, yes, you know, I was reading Shooting an Elephant, and I said, yeah, it's a great essay. He said, well, he's overrated, don't you think? And I thought, well, that's interesting. He never wanted to hear, you know, if you asked Naipaul who he liked, he would say nobody, no living writer, and only a few dead ones. I'd say Henry James, he said he overwrites. I'd say Orwell, he's overrated. You say Dickens, he overwrites. You'd mention anyone, D.H. Lawrence, Thackeray, Melville, Emily Dickinson. I've recited an Emily Dickinson poem to him, and he said, it sounds like twaddle. And so that kind of judgment makes you think he's competing.
And once you wrote this,
made me think that anyway.
Once you wrote your book about him and your relationship with him, did that sort of exercise whatever feelings you had about that relationship and whatever rivalrous feelings he felt or non-rivalrous feelings?
Yes. Yeah, definitely exercise. When a friendship ends, it is dead as a doornail and is a great subject. And there are not many books about friendship, or a great friendship, because you can only write about it when it ends. Then you have a perspective on it. I didn't dislike Naipaul at the end, but I thought I can't trust him, and I suppose he felt the same thing. Something had ended, and it ends forever. So it's writing the book, as you to use your word, yes, it exercised something, but it also reminded me of all the things that I hadn't written about. The idea of writing about a friendship is very threatening to people. And so my reviews were terrible, but because people saying, well, if he's doing that to his friend, you know, what would he do to me? What kind of a person is he? But it wasn't a getting even book. It wasn't saying what an awful person Naipaul was. It was how wonderful it is to know someone like that over 30 years and become a writer and learn so much. And what an odd fit. I remember Philip Roth read it and he said, he's a great character. I couldn't invent the things, you know, mm-hmm. the things that he says and the things that he does that are just so strange. He's a character. You've got to write about him as an odd fish. Well, so there it is. But I didn't feel that it was a rivalry.